necessarily those of WSVU, its staff, or management.
Recovery Radio Raw. Not your ordinary 12-step recovery radio show. We tell it like it is. No holds barred, 12-step recovery, solution style. Where we are not afraid to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth when we share our experience, strength, and hope. Now, join your host, Indian Bob, and his guests getting edgy to the down and dirty of the raw, the real, the recovery. 12-stepping it recovery solution style. Right now, it's R to the third power. It's your triple R, R, R. Indian Bob's Recovery Radio. Raw, baby.
All right, welcome to the triple R, the real, the raw, and the recovery. I'm Indian Bob, your host. You can touch tone us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960. We're here every Monday evenings from 7:30 to 9 p.m. on 95.9, 106.9 FM and AM 960. You want to check us out in the studio, go to recoveryradioraw.com, click on Listen Live, hit the studio cam on Seaview Radio's website, and there we shall be. This is a 12-step recovery talk radio show, and we cover a lot of different stuff. And tonight, which is actually kind of a surprise, it's strange how things work out for me sometimes. But we have in the studio tonight Heart Virtue, or better known as, let me see if I get this right, because her name is actually spelled Tamara, but we're going to do West Coast. It's Tamara Montana and Greg Montana, who do a little thing called Heart Virtue. And tonight's topic is Don't Go Breaking My Heart. And I think we actually have that tune somewhere here. We're going to play a little bit of that while I describe exactly what we're going to be talking about during the show tonight. Now, a lot of topics are kind of unusual on my show, as you know. It's, I guess, why I call it Recovery Radio, where I would get a little edgy. But today, it's going to be more about the inner you and how you can find yourself and succeed in a lot of different forms, relationships, business, your addictions, the ability to overcome them by finding your pain as a motivator, I believe, or something along those lines, Greg. Your pain is your credentials. Can we bring Greg up a little bit? All right, now try it.
Your pain is
there,
your credentials.
There we go. All right, Tamara, why don't you say hi?
Hi, everybody.
Okay,
yes.
There we go. Now, let's get into this a little bit. I'm going to break your anonymity for you, Greg. How long have you been clean and sober?
31 years.
31 years. And Tamara, are you...
Actually, that's not... I mean, we all have an addiction.
Okay.
But mine's not around alcohol or drugs. But I have worked in rehab when I was interning as a psychotherapist.
Well, she, fortunately for me, is a sex addict, and she's not recovering at all.
Okay, well, yeah, I like that. Well, the good news about that is
that,
is that wait a minute, can... All right, hold on a second. You got that kind of smile on your face.
Because I got to explain. She is a human sexuality professor. She's been teaching it for 7 years, and she's got a fascinating history with that. But I got some of the greatest sexual education I've ever had just sitting in her classroom.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought you were smiling because, well, never mind.
Well,
actually,
he taught me everything I know, so...
Okay, you know what? I'm starting to think I should be Oprah or something here. Where's this show going anyway? But the strange that you bring that up, next month, April, is going to be entirely sex addiction month.
Wow.
We're going to be dealing with a lot of the issues, particularly intimacy and couples and relationships and how that varies with the sex addict and how once they've recovered, how do they deal with intimacy and how can they change that aspect of their lives? Because they kind of have to relearn it. But that's all of the month of April is going to be a sex addiction. So we're going to stop talking about it tonight. We won't ruin any surprises. Mm-hmm. If it pops up, it's okay because I really don't like the topic of sex. I
mean, pops up.
Yeah, it's, see.
Stop yourself.
Yeah. Well, and see, I was going to have you back for that because obviously you'd be ideal. That'll be a comedy show in itself.
Oh,
I have seven kids, so it's popped up several times.
There you
or
go.
At least seven, anyway. Anyway, on to our topic at hand. People are calling and they're going, okay, wait a minute. Is this really a show about recovery or
yes.
What are we talking about? Let's talk a little bit about first, Greg, you getting clean and sober. What happened? I read a little bio on you. Plus, I heard you guys down at Karen Rayner's Inner Circle, and you did your little spiel out in front of there, and I found it very, very fascinating. particularly the parts about what your credentials are. And never did I ever think, I think in 12-step recovery, we say we don't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on. As a matter of fact, we hold on to it and we nurture it and we use that as a motivator to stay where we are. So when did you, what was your drug addiction, or was it alcoholism, drugs, combination?
Yeah, I was an alcoholic when I was 13 years old. I started drinking and I drank till I was 19. Now, I'm pretty sure that when I was born, my father was drunk. When I was, you know, I know he was at a bar, and when I was conceived, he was probably drunk. And, you know, my mother divorced him when I was 2. And when I was, when I was 13, I started drinking heavily. And a girl walked up to me when I was 19 years old in college at a mixer. And she said, "You drink too much and you can't stop." And I looked down at that drink in my hand, and it was like my dead father was floating in the glass. And I just looked at the glass and I put it down, and 3% of addicts will give up their addiction that way. They will put it down and never touch it again. So
wow,
that was,
I'm
fortunately,
percent.
Yeah, I fortunately was in that, that realm of being able, I had very strong willed. And yet, you know, one of my main messages is that if you're an addict, join the club. The human being is an addiction-forming creature. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't form addictions, you wouldn't be able to remember anything. You couldn't remember how to do something you'd done before. So the secret really is to stop beating yourself up and start making choices. You know, right. It's just like, I just made a choice. And it was a terrifying choice.
And a lot of people don't understand that. They don't know that they can make that choice. I didn't know that I could make that choice. And it took certain things for me to have the ability to make that choice. They describe it a lot in the literature as a white light experience. I mean, whoa, what an epiphany, you know? Even though we have people throughout our lives telling us, now you got lucky because one person said it to you, is right, that's it.
And I don't even remember her name. She was just some angel came out of the woodwork, walked up to me, looked square in my eye, said, "You drink too much and you can't stop."
I like the way you said that. I realized after I got sober and clean how many different angels had walked into my life, and I just was completely unaware. It's about that adage where people say, you know, I pray to God all the time, but he never answers me. But those are the ways that he does. He puts certain people in our lives to. My biggest problem with getting clean and sober was I was afraid everybody else was going to be right if I did. You know, it meant that I said, okay, guys, I do have a problem.
Right.
And lo and behold, They were right.
And, well,
and this is going to air later on the website too, so people are going to hear that, and I had to say it.
Yeah, and you know, and then my second experience with addiction was when I was hired. I actually worked with a couple of clients, and that's the Heart Virtues work that we did. Guy got tremendous value out of it, and he owned a rehab center, and he said, "Why don't you come and work at the rehab center?" And what ended up happening was I worked at the rehab center with this one guy, and basically he ends up getting clean and sober, discovers his heart virtue, had to do with innocence. And, you know, we have one word that's like for each one of these people. And everybody's got one word that they really drives him. And when he got it about innocence, he said, oh my God, he went back to his family and his daughter, cleaned himself up. He just, you know, he had a bigger yes than his addiction.
Right.
And he ended up coming back a year later for a reunion at the rehab center. And I saw him walking up to me with the daughter that he had told me about in his hands. That had her, you know, a little 2-year-old girl. And he walked right up to me, and then he leaned down, looked into his daughter's eyes, and said, "I want to introduce you to the man that helped save Daddy's life." And what happened, now keep in mind, my dad left when I was 2. And I never saw him again. He died when I was 9, drunk in a car accident.
Well, we have such similar stories. Mine left when I was 3. And he died, I believe I was like 18. We traveled out from Connecticut to Michigan to see him dying in a hospital bed. Never knew anything about him.
Yeah, and that's
no emotions, no nothing. Just there's this guy that was my dad.
And it's funny because I said the same thing. My grandmother said to me, "I'm sorry, your dad passed away." I said, "I didn't even know him."
Yeah,
I just flipped it off. I was like,
and it's a difficult place to be. And I remember the trip out. I was angry at him. And I mean, literally homicidal angry. Because I had thought that he was the fault of my life, that he made me the way I am today. Because I was told a lot of times that it was going to be like him. And he was an alcoholic also. And by the time I got out there, there was nothing. I was like, I don't even know this guy. Why am I so angry with him?
Yeah, I didn't even go. We didn't go to his funeral or anything. It was, but the thing that transformed me in my addiction more than anything, because it used to be a pain, and it was a pain my whole life until that experience I had with him some 25 years later with this one guy that came back and said, you know, because of the pain that you've been through with your dad,
mm-hmm.
his daughter gets to have a father.
Right.
And just literally my pain turned into my credential overnight. And one of the things, you know, you and I both know, it's like you go to a rehab center and you sit down and have lunch with the people, you can't tell the difference between the staff and the addicts.
No.
Because if you haven't got extensive experience in addiction, right, you're not qualified to be helping people.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that was probably my biggest problem with treatment or those who tried to help people with my drug and alcohol problems was that they didn't understand. They didn't have that personal life experience with it. It was more about book knowledge. No offense, Tamara, psychotherapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, and all the like, I always go by, well, you've read that out of the book, and you never ever tell me anything. You sit there and you listen to me and you take your little notes, but you don't do anything to help me because you don't have personal experience with that. Can you identify with that at all? Has anybody ever told you that?
Yes, absolutely. And just to say, too, that a lot of people get into psychotherapy, they get in the helping profession because they want to heal themselves as well.
Right.
So, you know, we've all...
I was right.
It's true. It's true.
I know.
I mean, I got into psychotherapy because I wanted to know what made relationships work because right. I had my own dark hallways through my mind, you know, and understanding that my pain is my credential. The first time I ever heard Greg speak those words, I thought, my God, finally, someone's giving us permission to own what we've been through, not with shame,
right,
but with, wow, I've been entrusted with this experience. Who do I get to be now that I've experienced this? And how can I honor it through forgiveness, and how can I show other people through their dark tunnels as I am seeking to find my way through mine?
And based on your own experience, or like you say, seeing your way through. For a long time, I have told people that a lot of reasons why people get into these types of fields is because they have their own difficulties that they're trying to get through.
Absolutely.
Part of why I help other people in recovery is the reason I do this show. Am I trying to help people? Absolutely. Without a doubt, I am. But at the same time, I in turn get a lot of answers to my... I love the guests I have. I learn so many things. And speaking of which, we've got a little different thing that's going to happen tonight. Sometime after the top of the hour commercials, a little bit after 8 o'clock, probably about 7 minutes after 8 o'clock, the roles are going to change here, and Greg is actually going to become the host of Recovery Radio Raw, and I'm going to be the guest. Is that how this is going
to
work?
I'm going to need Tamara to help me out because I know you're a seasoned veteran, so the two of us are going to team up, and we are going to co-host you, and you guys are going to find out all about the questions that no one's ever been willing to ask Bob before.
Yeah, and because most people look once at me, and they go, I ain't asking him that, and I wouldn't know about seasoned veteran. I do know some things. I don't have a PhD, although some people seem to think I do. I don't know where they get that from, but I do have a PhD in life.
So for those of you that haven't met Indian Bob, he stands about 6'4". He's covered with tattoos, and you know,
that's me.
Formidable dude. So is, you know, he's got a PhD in life, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of it very of a violent nature. I spent a lot of time in prison and doing some things that most people don't do. And I'm not that guy today, but I am that guy today. And a lot of times that side of me has a greater ability to help people than the new guy. You know, yeah. the guy who's been sober and clean for 10 years. It's the old guy who has the ability to really turn things down, because that's the guy I have to present to people in order for them to get the idea.
Well, and right. Let me ask, do you go to prisons and help people out that are struggling with life?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm. So now let me ask. So here I am. I've been 31 years sober, and I've been trained to do accelerated learning techniques, and I've got all kinds of, you know, ability to really listening skills, this whole thing. Who's more qualified to go into a prison? My wife here with a marriage and family psychotherapy degree and tons of training, me that's got, you know, all kinds of skills and training, or you that's actually walked the walk?
Well, I already envisioned them, number one, a woman going in to talk to them. They ain't going to hear anything anyway. They're going to be, you know, somewhere else. You look like a professor. It's just my...
Yeah, they're not going to listen to me.
Clean,
I haven't got a tattoo
kinda,
anywhere on my body.
No, yeah. and as soon as they see me walk in the door, the first thing... And I know I went into South Bay Maximum Security Prison not too long. A couple of years ago, I went in. First time they got approved to go into the system, which took a while. But that has been my passion, is to get into the system, to bring the message of recovery to convicts. I was one of them. They brought it to me. I wasn't interested in it. But because they weren't bringing the people, and you know, when you said that that be the person that they would more be more likely to listen to, nobody came into prisons like that. Nobody mm-hmm. talked about ever having been in prison or any of those things. We're going to cover a little more of that after the top of the hour, because I have a feeling I'm going to be on the hot seat for a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit more about heart virtue when we come back. I want to talk a little bit about what you guys do, how you tag team it together, because I was there for your talks and it was really cool. So I want you to discuss a little bit about that and how that applies to the treatment aspect, and how can treatment centers in general benefit from what you guys do, and how do they go about getting in touch with you? How can they have you come do a demonstration for them, or whatever it is that we can get them information on. We'll be right back on the Triple R. Don't go away, or else.
I'm Randy Grimes. Injuries from my NFL career led to an addiction to pain medication. Fortunately, I found Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches. This program saved my life, and I believe it can do the same for you. For intervention and treatment for your loved one, visit our website at bhpalmbeach.com or call us at 877-886-2345. There is hope. We can help.
Recovery Radio Raw is a call-in 12-step recovery talk show. Discussing 12-step recovery from all types of addictions such as alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex, and so on, with the disorders that make up the addiction. It's Indian Bob, his guests, and you sharing experience, strength, and hope with those in recovery and those who might be just curious to it. If you have a family member or friend, or maybe someone you work with who might have a problem with addiction, then this is the show. Call into Recovery Radio Raw Monday evenings from 7:30 to 9 p.m. on 95.9 FM, 106.9 FM, and AM 960. Touch Tony at 877-960-9960 to get the real, the raw, the recovery. It's the Triple R, Indian Bob's Recovery Radio Raw, baby.
Drug treatment admissions for pain medication abuse have risen more than 400% since 1998. This increase affects individuals regardless of their age, gender, race, wealth, or level of education.
Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches offers hope for the disease of addiction. For intervention, treatment, and aftercare for your loved ones, visit our website at bhpalmbeach.com or call us at 877-886-2345. There is hope. We can help. Located in a tranquil setting in Palm Beach, Florida, Seaside Center for Women is a rejuvenating haven for women suffering from trauma or substance abuse. We combine expert clinical care with innovative treatments. We help women regain their strength, find their focus, and live the lives they truly deserve. You don't have to spend another minute suffering. Visit us at helpforwomen.com or call 888-302-5579 and embrace a new beginning.
Through time, we can see a variety of changing styles of smoking pipe, from the earliest to the latest. The reasons people smoked back then were primarily ceremonial. They would smoke for to attract game animals, or smoke as part of a healing ceremony, but also probably also for pleasure, too.
Oh yeah, he's smoking, but not like he and his ancestors once did. It's Indian Bob, giving you some good, some bad, some ugly, giving you Recovery Radio Raw, baby.
Best be careful. We're back. This is Recovery Radio Raw. Touch Tonas at 877-960-9960. Let your fingers do the walking. Didn't AT&T or Bell South or somebody say that? 877-960-9960. This is where it's at. 12-step recovery. It don't get any better than this. We've got Tamara, L.A. style Tamara, and Greg Montana. Now, I got to ask you this question, because I did a little peeking at Heart Virtue, and it says you actually have two names, right? What is the middle one there?
It's Greg Moores, Montana. My original name was Welch. You can't spell it. I'll give you 10 shots. You can't spell
so
it.
Okay, go ahead.
You changed it. So I watched my wife when I married her. I watched her spell the name three or four times over the phone, and I've been doing that for 40
years. What's the name?
Moores.
Moores? Mm-hmm. I can spell that name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's Welsh, and that's the name.
M-O-O-R-E-S.
Nope. You want nine more?
No, because you said it's Welsh. Wait a minute, I got to Google
M-O-O-E-R-S. But I don't use it anymore. It's Greg Montana.
I happen to see it on there, and I'm going, okay, wait a minute. Is this one of the modern-day things where you take the wife's name when you get married?
No.
People do that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they come from a family of prominence or whatever, and part of what they sign is that you take that name so that they can carry on the family name. Because obviously, if you have boys after that, then they get that name.
Well, and that's the Christian way, is you take the paternal name. But in Judaism, they follow the mother as the bloodline, and that's considered to be your bloodline?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My wife is Jewish because her mom is Jewish. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I was like, okay. And it's funny how that kind of stuff works. Heart virtue. What is it?
Okay, so what happened was, and my background's in quantum physics, and during the years
genius.
I studied, not really. There were two things. I failed out so many times, I should have left that. I probably would have been so much better failing out. Everybody I knew that went to the same high school was making money while I was spending it all. And by the time I was making money, they were already well on their way. So I encourage people to go out and be courageous in the field rather than going and stacking up. And your credentials are your natural credentials, the ones that you suffered with. So I studied this thing, and there were two principles in quantum physics that really struck me. One was called the observer effect. And basically, people say, well, you point one thing at them and you're pointing three at you. You basically don't see the world the way the world is. You see the world the way it is. Mm-hmm. They say, physician, heal thyself. Or, it's just this, the whole concept of hypocrisy. And we all have it. And we've all caught ourselves. Like when you're doing something and you're criticizing somebody for somebody else, but you know it's you, right? With all that frustration. So the observer effect is actually a principle that basically proved scientifically that when we're looking at things, we basically change them. All right, so now all this responsibility is dumped on your lap.
Right.
Like if you're seeing things in the world and your face twists up, you're responsible on some level. You feel responsible.
You sound like my sponsor.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's just pay attention to the body you live in.
Right.
And that was something that took me 8 years to learn because I was a monk for 8 years. And during the 8 years that I was a monk, I went and did my, graduated from college and worked at a large semiconductor
company. I got to tell you, I read that part of it. I'm going, wait a minute. You went from quantum physics to having a successful business to becoming a monk. It's almost like out of the 60s and 70s, you were trying to find yourself or something. I'm going, hello, you're on this quest.
If you're not paying attention to what you really care about,
right,
then those are the paths you got to take. You got to go off oh, I'll go do this and I'll go do that. And if you do pay attention to what you really care about, it's like what strikes me about you, Bob, is like you got this authenticity about caring about people. Well, during the years—
I don't know how that happened.
Well, it happened with all the credentials you've had because of the pain you've been through, and you don't want other people to suffer with it because you've been through hell. Mm-hmm. I read your bio too, and I'm like, wow, man, this guy has really run it ragged. And everyone on the line, the thing you need to know, we're not going to, drugs aren't going to stop because some government program gets put in place. It's because you decide that you're going to care about somebody not suffering from what you went through, mm-hmm. or because you watched your brother die. Right now, I got a brother in Sarasota, and he is a mess. And like the pain that I feel over his life is worth coming out here and talking on the radio.
Yeah, it's same thing with my brother.
Yeah,
four and a half years ago.
Reaching out, man, that's what really matters. So, what happened was I studied the lives of these people in when I was in a monastery called heroes, because I was like, all right, if life has a purpose, it's got to be one of those guys.
And you had some really good heroes. Tell them who they are.
Mother Teresa, she was committed to compassion. Martin Luther King was committed to brotherhood. Abraham Lincoln was committed to unity. Gandhi was committed to peaceful liberation. And when I say those words, those are the heart virtues. So your heart virtue is the part of you that is directly connected to the hero inside you. Now, what's really fascinating about studying the lives of these people that are heroes is that they have a very specific set of characteristics. Like personality characteristics. And the first characteristic they have is that they are self-centered. They take risks, number two. They challenge the system, number three. They go after what they want, and they're stubborn and perseverant. That's four and five. So, self-centered, takes risks, challenges the system, goes after what they want, stubborn as hell. Where else do we find people that are like that? Well, it's the addict's profile, right?
Right.
So what I discovered was, oh my God, these heroes throughout history are actually the troublemakers. And what if it's true that these guys that, you know, that we see are constantly in trouble, the people that, you know, you help so often, you know, in jail or whatever they're going through. What if the truth is the reason they're breaking the rules is because they're doing something selfish and that's why they end up in jail? But if they were to break the rules to do something like Gandhi, mm-hmm. or break the rules to do something like Martin Luther King, you know, instead of to get, they got the exact same skills as the addict, only they're using them to give, to make a contribution to humanity. And I honestly believe that every addict out there is actually a hero that just doesn't have the skills.
Well, so I think they're their own heroes. They just haven't discovered what it is that makes them.
Exactly. They're standing on their own two feet. They're beaten to a different, you know, right. they're marching to a different drum. And basically, they're perfectly primed to take a stand. If their pain can turn into their credential, they identify their heart virtue and go out and make the contribution they were born for.
All right, we're going to bring, I believe it's Khalil, if I'm close enough on that spelling. Khalil, welcome to Recovery Radio Raw.
Oh, hi, thank you.
How are you?
Khalil.
I'm fantastic.
Oh, Khalil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that in West Coast style too?
Yeah, I'm in Malibu, California. Lifestyles of the rich and aimless.
I like them already because I was about to go. Oh, Malibu!
I was born in Ohio, sir. I spent 21 years in Ohio, so I'm a transplant.
Yeah, well, I think like most of us, I'm originally from Hartford, Connecticut, and I'm here in South Florida. And so we're all transplants. We're all transients of nature too. Mm-hmm. When it comes to moving around, discovering things. How are you? And what do you want?
You know, I've never been better, and I just wanted to you know, call up and talk about my own experience with what it is that you guys are talking about.
Do you know what we're talking about?
Well, I assume you're speaking with Greg Moores.
Hey, Khalil, Greg Montana here. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm fantastic, and Greg, I had the honor and the privilege of actually having access to him one-on-one, what was it, 6 years ago, Greg?
Yeah, that was back when when you were going through your own rehab there. And then,
yeah.
And that was where you told me you were unemployable because of your background with drugs. When did you start?
Oh, God, you know, as a kid, like anybody else.
Right.
Early, you know, 8 years old, more experimenting and trying to impress the older kids, but when I was about 12, it was when I started having sex and blackout drinking and taking pills and all of that good stuff back in Ohio.
And you went through the master's degree and became a dealer, and then the PhD, and you went through the whole
program. I did. I became I was a drug dealer and a hustler and lived on the streets and sobered up and wound up with what seemed like at the time anyway a lot of really unhappy people sitting around in these rooms that seemed like they had failed at life and smoking a lot of cigarettes and drinking a lot of coffee, and it scared the hell out of me.
And I'm going, boy, that sounds just like all the people I know.
Totally. And I still remember, Khalil, when you walked up to me and you called me on my stuff because I was talking about how your pain is your credential, and if you guys, you know, you have the hero's temperament and you can turn around and all this, and you pulled me aside and you said, who are you kidding?
Yeah.
And we had a little bit of an argument that I think we both wanted me to win, though, because I was arguing on your behalf that you could do this and you could go out and that you're paying. Because you remember that? I remember talking to you about, you know, you were like, well, I have no credentials. I said, well, what do you know? You're like, all I know is drugs.
Yeah.
That's all I said, well, that's your credential. And
yeah.
you were so brilliant, man. You turned that around in days.
Well, it was when I was hearing you talk, you know, you were speaking to some people that came from some pretty, you know, fairly affluent backgrounds and also were educated and, you know, connected, and some of them hit the lottery by birth. And to me, it was offensive because, you know, it's like, yeah, that's great for them, but what about me, man? I have no future. I, you know, I'm unemployable. I don't have a high school diploma. I'm a convicted felon. You know, my life sucks, and my life is gonna suck. That's how I felt.
Wow, you could tell my story. I'm thinking, yeah. Well, what about us?
And now tell them who you are now.
Well, I mean, today everything is totally different, 180 degrees different. I mean, I'm sitting inside a 7,000 square foot home that is my facility. It's called Riviera Recovery here in Malibu, California. I own it by myself. I started it by myself on a shoestring and a prayer, and the prayer came, you know, was answered. And I own another place called Sun Life Organics here in Malibu, which is a health food store and a juice bar. We serve about 300 to 400 people a day, many of them in recovery, and many of them, as you can imagine, I mean, not because we're so wonderful that we get all these, you know, movie stars coming into our shop, but you can't swing a dead cat in this town without hitting an Academy Award winner. But, you know, we serve a lot of that clientele, a lot of movie stars, a lot of rock stars, and a lot of people from the community. And I got a bunch of amazing, amazing stuff going on in my life today that never, ever in a million years did I think would be possible.
All right, hold
Khalil,
that.
What is your heart virtue?
My heart's virtue is I am committed to pure, authentic self-expression.
Pure, authentic self-expression. Well, we're going to have to cut that self-expression short for a minute. If you don't mind holding on, we've got some top-of-the-hour commercial breaks we have to take here locally. Recovery Radio Raw will be right back with Greg and Tamara and Khalil.
Hey, I know what this is. It's whiskey.
Smells awful.
Well, all whiskey smells awful.
Then why do people drink it?
Well, it's like when grown-ups have a party. They drink it to have a good time.
Gee, if it's a party, don't they have a good time anyway?
Well, grown-ups have a harder time having a good time than kids do.
This grown-up has no problem partying. On the clean and sober side, that is.
Leave It to Beaver. We'll continue in just a moment.
Until then, it's Indian Bob sharing his strength, his experience, his recovery. It's Indian Bob's Recovery Radio Raw.
All righty, welcome back. And if you know who Wally and the Beeb are, you are definitely dating yourself. Who are them guys anyway? No, I'm kidding. I grew up with them boys. Let's bring Khalil back on. I think I said that right this time. I don't care. I'm going to say, no, never mind. Khalil, welcome back. Thank you for holding.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about, number one, how you changed your life. You own a treatment center now and a juice bar, and you live in Malibu, and you can throw a cat at people, too. I'm surprised that's legal out there. But
well, you can swing them. You can't.
Oh, you can swing them. So it's okay just to wing them around your head. And
yes.
All right. Well, that sounds like West Coast kind of fun. Kind of like lawn jarts, but instead cats. Okay, let me see if I can hit that Academy Award winner over there. Welcome back onto the show. Thanks again for hanging on. Greg and Tamara. So now, Greg, you have personal experience with this gentleman, correct?
You know, and there's nothing more honoring than to meet somebody that's really sincere and tearing it up.
Right.
You know, it's like when I see people that are willing to just, they're so sincere. That's what Khalil was like. He looked me square in the eyes and just was like, my life matters, but I don't know what the hell to do with it. My life matters, and I care, and I want to do something for people, and I haven't got the credentials. And I mean, you know, to have somebody admit that their life has value, that's the one thing that I've always felt is the transition between being an addict and being in recovery, is when you admit that your life has value. And when that happens, the rest of it is just a question of, you know, going out and putting some ducks in a row.
Okay.
Prior to that, you can push that rock uphill all day. If you don't believe that your life has value, it doesn't matter how much I believe in you, it doesn't matter how many programs you go through. When you actually say, you know what, I want my life to matter, and I want it to mean something.
Yeah, but it wasn't until you pointed out that many of the characteristics that I had were the same characteristics of many people who, you know, as you mentioned, Gandhi and people like that, or
heroes.
John Lennon, or, you know, that when you pointed out that I had the same characteristics or some of the same psychological makeup as those people, then that was when the light bulb went off. You
know, so it's all Greg's fault.
Well, listen, if you take Greg out of the equation, I wouldn't be here today.
Right.
I mean, that's for sure. I mean, I wish everybody could sit down with him and have the opportunity to do a one-on-one coaching session, because, I mean, we did a few, but it was after the first, I think we spent an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours together. I walked out of that session and I felt invincible. I really did. I felt invincible, and I felt like I'm going to dream so big now, and I'm going to make these dreams come true. Now, look, very Pollyannic attitude, very naive attitude, very, I guess most people would say, unrealistic attitude, but so what? It worked. I mean, I don't know, you know, me thinking that I was a loser and that I was garbage and that I was this horrible person because I did drugs to cope with, you know, with my demons, was just as ludicrous a belief system. So why not believe that I could do anything or become anything?
Yeah, why not? And I think that's the big question that a lot of people don't ask is why not?
Well, and that's what infuriates me. You know, when I see you go to a recovery center and people are treating the people like you're a jerk, you made poor life choices, and I'm going to tell you how you can live your life. I'm like, you don't realize how incredibly courageous these people. Most addicts have risked their life.
Mm-hmm.
They have basically said, I am not going to live a mediocre life. I will not live in a status quo life.
Right.
And that's
right.
What Khalil had been doing for so long. The only thing was, you already had the dreams, Khalil. You just didn't have anybody that could put a container around them.
Right. You know what, though? I think you just described it perfectly. I think every addict, alcoholic out there has all those dreams, because we talk about them all the time. We have these master plans, and someday I'm going to do this, and someday I'm going to do that. And then I'm listening to Khalil, and I have the very same attitude, or had the very same attitude, is that I knew I had potential. I had a lot of people who said, you're a really nice guy, you're a really smart guy, if you would just stop doing this, if you could just stay out of prison, if you stayed away from the drugs, if you stopped drinking, you could be. And I didn't believe a damn one of them.
And really the trick is, see, I didn't tell Khalil to stop anything. And that's, I think, what doesn't work about recovery is stop telling them to stop. These guys are cut out to be heroes. They're born for it. You get one addict looking into another addict's eyes, meaning it when he says to them, you can stay off these drugs and I'm going to be accountable for that.
Right.
You know, sponsorship is huge. And with Khalil, I mean, he used me to empower him. Now, he can pretend I had credit, but he'd already made the choice. His life was going to matter, and he was going to make a difference. You take somebody that's risked their life as many times as he has with drugs and alcohol, looking for some way to have life have meaning.
Well, I'm going to give validity to what you said about he wants to blame you, but it's really him. Khalil, if you think about how many people have been through your treatment center, and chances are they would probably say if it wasn't for you, they wouldn't be there. You'd be more than likely to say no.
Yeah,
you're the
garbage.
One who did. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get parents that call me all the time. I mean, we have an unheard of success rate here. And just to clarify, we're secondary. We're not primary.
Right.
Riviera Recovery is more of a transitional living sober home than it is a primary treatment center. I didn't want to deal with acute withdrawal and detox and doctors and all that. My specialty is spending time with people and helping them to believe in themselves and teaching them new life skills and teaching them new habits and, you know, the yoga and going to the self-realization fellowship and meditation and, you know, so, you know, but yes, absolutely. I get parents that call all the time and go, oh my God, how did you do this? How did you do this? And, you know, I didn't. I didn't do anything. I mean, I guess I can take credit for modeling what an exciting, you know, wonderful life being clean and sober can look like. You know, I definitely do that. I have the most amazing, just drop-dead gorgeous girlfriend. I'm in...
No, you don't. I do.
Yeah, well, mine's with me right here.
Yeah.
No, I mean, honestly, she's perfect. She's absolutely perfect, and you know, and it's that, and you know, and having this passion for life, and being in the greatest shape of my life at 42 years old. I'm more physically capable now at 42 years old than I was at 22 years old. And that's not, I'm not trying to sound fancy or I'm not trying to exaggerate to prove a point. I mean that literally. Well,
That's an honest self-appraisal, and you shouldn't have to explain that. One of the things I always tell people, I'll be 52 years old in August, and physically, I'll keep up with any 25-year-old. And
totally.
That absolutely astounds me, considering what I did to myself out there from the age of 11 to 40. Okay.
Wow. So we did the same. Smoked for 20 years, you know, shot heroin, smoked crack, drank pills.
I'm addicted to more.
Yeah.
Or what do you got?
Yeah. Whatever you could put in a syringe or a spoon or a pipe, I didn't care. I just wanted more of it. And,
so your honest appraisal is definitely worth talking about as far as what you think of yourself in that aspect. Because if you think about the things that we did that put ourselves at risk, I think Greg said that a lot of times, we put our lives on the line. And now we put our lives on the line in the opposite way. You know, you guys do treatment, and you have heart virtue, and my thing is the radio show. And nobody would have ever guessed when I got here that I would get, number one, back into radio, number two, that I'd have any form of success at it, or number three, that it would have anything to do with 12-step recovery.
Right.
And this is my way to carry the message. And if you read my bio on the website, it clearly states that my main purpose of this is to carry the message of recovery to as many people as I possibly can. I want people to know that no matter where you've gone, no matter where you're going, there's time to make that choice, that there is hope, that there is a solution, and there's a lot of people willing to get you help and help you along the way. Like you said, sponsorship's a big thing.
Well, and you've been through that. You know, one of the things that, you know, you talk about heroism and courage. You know, Khalil, I'm going to tell a story here about Khalil, because when I started saying, hey, how's it going? You know, he had already put a program together, and he says it's a secondary recovery program, but he started out by being a sober companion.
Yeah.
So here's a guy with very expensive taste, because he's used to selling drugs, and he graduates. He's like, I'm not going to get a minimum wage job, you know, right? So, correct me if I'm mistaken, you were making like $1,000 a day as a sober companion, taking people right out of rehab and going like straight to their dealers and standing beside them and saying, making them say to the dealer, you ever sell me drugs again and I'll turn you in, and turn around and walking away. And I mean,
I did a lot of that. I smashed a lot of cell phones. I confronted a lot of parents that had done some things that were absolutely wrong and had, you know, tried to pretend that they didn't do them. Yeah, I walked some
people. Oh, we could hang. Yeah, we could hang.
But I want you to get...
I walked some people through some pretty dark moments and also, you know, yeah, got to travel all over the world in the process. And, you know, people say, how did you get, you know, how can I be that? Well, it wasn't like I chose. People chose me. People said to me, like, I want to hire you, and I want to pay you whatever it's going to cost, because I've got to, I mean, one, you'd probably remember, Greg, one guy had to go to the Olympics, and nobody could find out that he was a drug addict or an alcoholic, or he wouldn't be able to compete in the Olympics. So this guy hired me, and I had to go and live with him and train with him, which is hilarious, because the sport that he does is not something that I do. It was just the most amazing experience ever, and we had to train at 3 o'clock in the morning so nobody would see us training, and I got to go on tour with people. I got to do some really, really incredible things. But a very important point to make is that I also chose to not drink and not use one day at a time for the rest of my life.
How long have you been sober now?
June will be 9 years.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want you guys, if you're listening, to hear in Khalil's voice that the guy's got a life that's just literally a mirror image of who he was as an addict. It's like he was a crazed villain then, and now he's a secret agent now. And what's the opposite of a hero? It's not the villain necessarily. They're neck and neck. The hero and the villain. It's the victim. That's the opposite of a hero.
Right.
So Khalil made that shift. Instead of going from, you know, victim, he could have either gone from victim or villain.
Well, we play the role of victims when in our addictions anyway. And a lot of times people don't recognize that aspect of it. I really like the fact that you brought it up, because that's what I did. I was great at playing the victim. Society was against me. Employers were against me. Family were against me. Everybody.
Lots of drama.
Pour me a drink.
And and it's a powerful position in this country. The victims are powerful, man. It's just, you know, you can play victim and people come to your aid and they give you your funds and resources and all kinds of stuff. So it's a powerful position. You lose a lot of self-esteem. But
it is, but there's a lot of, you know, there was a lot of validity in the beginning as a child, you know, having the things done to me. I was the victim of incest and sexual abuse and violence, and my parents were immigrants to this country, so I didn't fit in, you know, in rural Ohio. I didn't exactly fit in with the mom, dad, dog, cat, dinner at six Irish Roman Catholic families. But having said that,
You gotta go. You're Catholics. It's been nice. No, I'm kidding.
I'm not. My father's Muslim, and my mother was born a Jew, but converted to Catholicism. I don't practice organized religion. But the point is, I was a victim. I was victimized as a child, but that was 3 decades ago.
Right.
Am I going to continue to hang on to that and continue to use drugs at that and continue to resent those people for that? I mean, that was the part that didn't make any sense.
Right.
It felt logical, but the reality was, here I was at 30 years old, you know, committing crimes, living on the streets, shooting dope, acting the fool, and being a liability to my community because some bad things had happened to me 3 decades earlier.
Right.
I mean, that's just silly. So the transformation from victim into hero was something that I thank God every day. I really do. I thank God every day that I got to finally become the man that God intended me to be.
Well, and then now look, you know, somebody shows up in your rehab center, recovery center, and they, because this is the one thing that I saw so frequently, is you start talking about recovery and they will fold their hands and say, what do you know about it? Now, here's Khalil sitting in front of you and you're telling him about how you were abused as a child, how you were incested. And they look at him and say, what do you know about it? And he can fold his hands back and say, I know exactly what your pain is.
And that's a big thing. And that's what I like about your credentials. That actually gives me the ability. I can tell you this. Most of my sponsees are all ex-gang members, all been in prison for whatever reason. And I don't tell anybody I'm going to sponsor them. These are the guys that ask me. They hear me speak or they hear me share something. My pain is my credential. They hear what they need to, and they know. And every one of them, when they come up, they go, I thought I'd never hear my story. I've never heard anybody say the things that you did in a meeting. And that's how I get them, because I revealed it to you at the luncheon, Greg.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about, we got into a conversation, and you asked me some questions, and I told you. And Khalil, if you want to stick around for this, we're going to take a commercial break, but if you want to stick around, Greg and Tamara, I guess both, I'm getting tag teamed here, are going to do the heart virtue thing on me, the heart virtue assessment, I guess it's called, right?
Oh, fantastic. That's how I learned my heart's virtue.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I'd love it if you'd stick around and be a part of that. When we come back, Indian Bob is going to be the guest on his own show. This ought to get interesting. It's going to be the heart virtue assessment. And when we're done, we'll tell everybody how they can go do their own heart virtue assessment. You can go to their website and check it out and find out what your heart virtue is. So Recovery Radio Raw, we'll be back after these messages. Hit it, Chuck.
In the next month, 7 million Americans will abuse prescription medications.
I'm Dr. Lewis Baxter, consulting medical director at Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches. Addiction is a disease that can affect anyone.
If you or a loved one are suffering from the disease of addiction, contact us now by calling 877-886-2345 or visit our website at bhpalmbeach.com.
There is hope. We can help.
Recovery Radio Raw. Not your ordinary 12-step recovery radio show. We tell it like it is. No holds barred, 12-step recovery solution style, where we are not afraid to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth when we share our experience, strength, and hope. It's Indian Bob and his guests getting to the down and dirty of what happened, what it was, what it is, and what's it gonna be. It's talk, calls, and discussion on edgy topics that will bring the reality of addiction and recovery from the dark side to a whole new vision and understanding, illuminated with the bright light that is life taken one step at a time. It's 12-step recovery solution style on the Triple R
Indian Bob's Recovery Radio Raw.
Located in a tranquil setting in Palm Beach, Florida, Seaside Center for Women is a rejuvenating haven for women suffering from trauma or substance abuse. We combine expert clinical care with innovative treatments. We help women regain their strength, find their focus, and live the lives they truly deserve. You don't have to spend another minute suffering. Visit us at helpforwomen.com or call 888-302-5579 and embrace a new beginning.
One in every five Americans has abused a prescription medication. One in every six will suffer from chronic pain this year.
My name is Randy Grimes, and I'm a 10-year veteran of the NFL. I was addicted to pain medication for over 20 years, and that addiction almost killed me.
I'm Dr. Lewis Baxter, Consulting Medical Director, Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches. When Randy first came to us, I was able to help him begin his recovery from the disease of addiction.
The folks at Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches, like Dr. Lewis Baxter, provided a safe and encouraging environment for me to get well.
If you or a loved one are suffering from the disease of addiction, contact Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches now by calling 877-886-2345 or visit our website at bhpalmbeach.com.
There is hope. We can help.
No subject is too taboo, 'cause he's recovering just like you. It's Indian Bob. It's R to the third power. It's Indian Bob's Recovery Radio Raw, baby.
All righty, welcome back to the Triple R. That's the real, the raw, and the recovery. Check out recoveryradioraw.com. Go to the archive shows and check out all the topics up there. You can listen to shows. You can download them to any electronic device that you have. Modern technology, cool stuff. Call us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960. We got Khalil back on the phone. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And we're back with Tamara and Greg Montana also. And this is where I guess I kind of bow out. Oh, wait. I got to say this, because by now, all of you who listen to the show every week, my wife texts me throughout the whole thing. And Khalil, when you said that you had the most beautiful girlfriend around, I said, No, I do. She sent me a text message and said, "You have a girlfriend?" and I'm thinking, no, I meant wife. So I know she's listening, honey. Oh, my God. Nice text message. I'm glad you reminded me. I almost thought I had a girlfriend there for a second. See how easy I can get myself in trouble? Okay. So here's where I kind of step out of the role of the host of the show.
That's right.
And Greg and Tim are going to take over, and I'm going to do like a mini version, a condensed version of the heart virtue thing. Mm-hmm. And when we're done, we're going to tell you how you can also take this very same assessment. It takes roughly an hour, you said?
About.
Okay, so
online watching videos and taking a little test.
Oh, there's videos too?
But we want to get to the core of this man right now.
Right. Okay, and here really, comes. Really, your comes heart trouble. Virtue is like opening up a jewelry box. So when we talk about your pain being your credential, it's underneath that pain. So most people are so afraid to go that deep within to really understand who they are and why they came here. Mm. And it's the pain that's in the way. Once you deal with the grief and the loss that's on the top, you let go of the resentment. It's like opening up a jewelry box. What's sparkling, the sparkling gem that's left on the inside of the treasure that is internal, is your heart virtue.
Okay.
And it's what's really cool is if you ask people to point to themselves, if everybody just does that right now, if you say, point to yourself, where do people point? They all point to their heart. So what's really interesting, and this is really the core of this, because we're going to be asking Bob some very intimate questions here for a second. But before, I need to give this a little.
I'm afraid of intimacy.
We want to get to the bottom.
Join the club.
Let me tell you. Here's where it shifted, and this is, you tell me, Khalil, whether this was really the transfer point, because so many addicts deal with rage. They deal with uncontrollable anger and rage. Now, here's what struck me, because I really got clear. I was like, wait a minute. What if anger and rage isn't actually a bad thing? Like when I look at heroes throughout history, when they're fighting for their cause, they look enraged and they are unstoppable with that commitment and that passion. So I was looking at rage and I was going, you know, here's the question. When you're enraged, would you be angry if you weren't committed to something?
No.
So isn't it true that every time you're enraged, you're committed to something beautiful that's being blocked or violated?
And, absolutely.
And what we're trained to do is attack the thing that's blocking us instead of paying attention to what we're committed to. So let me ask a question, Bob. You ever been enraged?
Yeah.
Give me an I want a specific story of when you got so angry it shocked you that you could be that angry.
It was in prison.
And what did you do specifically? Like it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and here's what happened.
A very large gentleman tried to take the cake off of my tray, and I picked up that tray and hit him in the throat with it and then stuck a pencil in his neck.
Fascinating. Now.
And you, that's the truth. Sorry.
I get it. I get
this
it.
Is raw.
Is raw. And now question. Here he is. He reaches for the cake and your thermometer hits the roof.
Skyrocket.
What were you committed to that he violated?
Hitting him.
What were you committed to that he violated that was beautiful that you that he destroyed? And I'll give you a hint. It'll sound something like respect, independence, honor, integrity, trust.
Well, it was more about honor.
More about honor, being honored, and what else?
And respected.
Honored and respected. Got it.
Yeah, in prison, those are like the two. Yeah.
Right. And that's
what you best honor me and you best respect me.
And by the way, that's what so few people realize about you know the prison system is that there is a code of honor that is beyond military.
Oh yeah.
In many ways. And you will respect it and adhere by it whether or not you are in the prison or whether you're running the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's life and death stuff that happens. So honor and respect. Now, tell me another instance about when you got so angry you actually smashed something.
Oh, God, what, the first time?
Anytime, the most shocking one you remember, like out of control.
I was probably a little over 11 years old. I had been placed in a foster home by my mom, and when I got there and they drove off after dropping me off, I smashed their piano.
And what were you committed to that was being violated when they drove off?
My security.
So was that, now say a little bit more about the virtue that you were committed to that they were violating. They weren't standing.
Well, they weren't violating anything. I think I was the one being violated. That I was
trust.
Being taken. A lot of my trust, absolutely.
Trust,
and,
what else?
And particularly any family values or anything else. I couldn't trust anybody. If I couldn't trust my mother to help me, how could I trust anybody else? Mm-hmm. And these people welcomed me with love, and I certainly had a distrust of that. How can you love somebody you don't even know?
Right. Now, so I want you, if you're listening, listen to where Indian Bob's coming from. He's coming from a place where he holds very closely to his tribe, to honor, to respect. Now, you mentioned also that you're 3/4 Cherokee, and you've got quite a tribal background.
Mm-hmm.
What was your role in the Cherokee Order?
What was my role?
Yeah.
What do you mean, my role?
Well, you say what you did. You play any kind of a role as an elder, or did you hold any? Okay,
no.
Now, when people, if people were to talk about that part of your life, how does it feel?
As far as that part of life, I take a lot of pride in that part.
Pride.
Of life.
So now I want you to hear it again: honor, respect, pride. Mm-hmm. His family takes all this. Now, this is basically how we.
This is leading up to, because I already know what kind of family guy I am, and I also know, okay, all right, I see this. This is cool.
So what we would know about Indian Bob is he is committed to respect and honor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way you would communicate that in a prison is you'd grab my cake, I'm going to put a pencil in your throat.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're really committed to is respect and honor.
Mm-hmm.
So we as human beings are trained to attack the things that are blocking what we're committed to. Mm-hmm. You want to know how Gandhi liberated India? He didn't get caught up in his enemy. He didn't get caught up in any of the blocks. He just said, India is going to be liberated. And he stayed focused on what he wanted.
Right.
Now you got Khalil on the line. Khalil has all kinds of excuses for not having life turn out. But he got focused on what he wanted. And does he have credentials for opening a recovery center? No, but he opens Riviera Recovery. Now he's got a juice bar. People are being healed, and his pain has turned into a credential because he stayed focused on what he wanted.
Right.
Not, but as human beings, like literally from the minute we're born, we are trained to attack the thing that blocks what we want instead of saying focused on what we wanted.
Hmm.
And this is so key in recovery, because it's like, you know, if you're constantly...
I can already see that. It's almost, because I do have some experience, but as you're doing this, I'm going, okay, I get it.
Right, and now here's what... And now tell me if this is what's going on.
I'm going to do the whole hour on your website.
Yeah,
do the whole thing and do the video.
Now, here's what's really fun, is that we take an inventory of a few of your rage moments, and you start to see a pattern form.
Right.
There's a second experience, just like the rage experience, that is as powerful and as profound. And it's what we call goosebumps. So have you ever been watching a movie that was
God
so
shots.
Beautiful? Yeah, you call them God shots. Have you ever been watching a movie that was so beautiful, a rush of love went through your body, tears running down your cheeks? It's like, yes, that's the way life.
Oh, man, you want me to admit to something like that?
Uh-huh. What's the scene?
It's, oh, God. All right, I'll say it. The of all time, the movie Ghost.
Right.
When the two of them are sitting there doing the pottery wheel.
The clay.
Yeah, and the ditto thing. And as a matter of fact, a lot of times when people say something sentimental or loving or kind to me, I always say in the famous words of Patrick Swayze, ditto. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite sayings, specifically because that scene, I could feel it, literally
now,
watching it.
Cool. So now, we've got Ghost and ditto. Now, that was about... What was that really about? Was that about mutual respect? Was that about
connection?
I think it was more about communication and connection, that they just had this thing. And so much so that it went beyond life, real life.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't there at that time.
Got
he already died.
So I'm going to ask you one more question. Tell me about a time in your life when you did something for somebody else that was so beautiful and so meaningful, it literally moved you to tears.
That's a simple one. And I will always remember it because it was almost 10 years ago. My sponsor told me I had to do something nice for somebody, and I couldn't let them know that I did it, and I couldn't tell anybody else. And then after I did it and I told him what I did, he said I could share this experience. And I'll probably cry when I say it anyway because it happened to be one of those things. I'm not a big McDonald's guy. I just don't like fast food. I was out on the road. I was angry. Hunger, angry, and I get very irritable when I'm hungry. And I drove up to this McDonald's, and there was a lady behind me. She had three kids in the car, and she's yelling and screaming for them to stop, and mommy only has this amount. I couldn't hear the thing, and all I could think, I can't hear the guy to take my order. I just want to eat something. And they're screaming. They want Happy Meals, and she says, mommy doesn't have enough money. And I finally get my order through. And I'm angry. I just wanted to get away from the lady with the kids. And I got up to the window to pay for my meal. And for whatever reason, and to this day, I don't know. I know it was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I said, what did the lady in the car behind me order? And she said, a couple of cheeseburgers and some small Cokes. And I said, could you do me a favor and give them all Happy Meals and sundaes? And I want to pay for it. And the lady looked at me like I was crazy, and I said, but there's one more thing. I want you to tell them that it's on McDonald's today. Mm. And she said, you don't want me to tell them it's from you? And I said, no. And I got my meal, and I parked out in the front, and I waited. Car comes through the drive-thru, and she pulls over by the car wash in the parking lot. And for those of you here in locally, it's the Promenade Plaza McDonald's, and the doors open. And the kids come out, and they're all smiling and waving. They're Happy Meals. And the mom pops the trunk, and she takes a blanket and spreads it out in the parking space next to them. So here's this little family having this picnic. Mm-hmm. And I sat in the truck and did the same thing. I cried because I watched that. And I think the thing that did it for me was that I was capable of that. Mm-hmm. Without any thought or anything else, I had the ability to do something for somebody that meant something. And they didn't need to know that. They were just ecstatic. And it was easy. I put so much effort into trying to succeed at what my sponsor asked of me that the answer with no thought came to me. And it really involved no thought. But it was probably one of the more beautiful moments in my life.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what I want you to see is all these stories about the rage and the goosebumps in your life all point to a single thing, and it's honor and respect for family. Mm-hmm. Honor and respect for family. And when that,
it's one of my pet peeves.
But I want you to get, you call it a pet peeve, but it's also the core of your deep-seated commitment to humanity.
Well, it has a lot to do, I think, with the fact that I come from a single-parent home, that I didn't have a dad, and I swore I'd never
now,
be that way.
I want you to notice, because what's about to happen is what we see everybody, it happens for everybody when they get their heart virtue. I just told you that you're committed to honor and respect for family, which is what we just disclosed by going through your goosebumps and your rage, which you get at heartvirtue.com by going through the assessment, and you, immediately, your mind's racing to, yeah, but that's because of this, and that's because of that. And this will happen to you for the next 24 hours. You'll be coming up with all kinds of evidence for why honor and respect for family is the very core of who Indian Bob is. I guarantee it's why you started this radio program, because you got a family of addicts out there, and you're not gonna, not when Indian Bob's around, they're gonna know there's somebody that cares, right? So it's like honor. Now here's the thing, you may have known that, but were you speaking it? And Khalil can tell you a little bit too, because we, you know, when he got his heart virtue, which you said it was self-expression, Khalil.
Yeah, I'm committed to pure, authentic self-expression.
Now, notice how different that is from Indian Bob, who's committed to honor and respect for family. And I'm committed to spiritual integrity, which means I get absolute goosebumps when I see somebody living their plan for their life instead of somebody else's plan for their life. Infuriates me when I hear these kids are going out and they're doing what they're, I'm going to college, becoming a doctor. I'm like, I'm ready to tear my heart out. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is your life, dude. This is a free country. There are countries where you go and you have no choice. You're born into slavery. Yeah, you're going to do what you're told. Not in this country. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
So, yeah, and your family was the people that you were living with, and one of them, one of your family members, decided to take your cake, and that probably touched on some innocence and some childhood stuff, and that made you enraged and violent. Now, you could have taken my cake anytime. Whatever. Maybe it would have upset me. Maybe it wouldn't have upset me. I don't particularly like cake, but I wouldn't have become violent over it.
But it's a commodity in prison, Khalil.
Right, I understand. But if I was sharing my heart and soul with you, and you were my roommate or my cellmate, and I was sharing my heart and soul with you and expressing the deepest longings and passions and secrets of my heart, and you started laughing, or you said, oh, that's fucking stupid, I would have killed you. Because that's my heart's virtue, pure, authentic self-expression. That's
no right. F-bombs.
Oh, sorry.
This is live radio.
Oh. Oops. I didn't realize that.
That's okay. I think Chuck got it.
That's how passionate I am.
That's okay. Yeah, I think my producer got that one.
All right, sorry, sir.
No, I can appreciate that.
So here's the point. The point is that everybody has these commitments, and they're either, if you're not expressing them like a Gandhi or a Martin Luther King, by burning that fuel steady and strong, it will show up as a sharp charge, and you'll do damage in relationship. You will become enraged, you will become infuriated, and you'll say things you wish you hadn't said, do things you wish you hadn't done. And as you know, Indian Bob knows, you can end up incarcerated if you don't take responsibility for the things inside you that are going to be committed to something and seeing that happen. So, you know, Khalil has been through it. You've been through it. Tamara and I. Tamara went through her own thing. And you mentioned, you know, having her on another show because her background, she was like JonBenet. And she was sexually just perpetrated her whole life. And now she's a human sexuality professor. She's a social worker, an MFT, marriage and family therapist. Mm-hmm. So she decided to turn her pain. She's like, you know what? She says, I got tired of being the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. And I wanted to be the fence at the top. Because she's been through that pain. Right.
And my heart virtue is authentic expression and innocence.
Wow.
I love when innocence is honored. And it just enrages me when it's hurt.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with my family thing. It's like when it comes to the kids, is when they're hurt, it really does. It enrages me, the innocence, particularly the ones who are innocent. That goes back, too, to childhood.
Right. So when we studied these heroes throughout history, they all had basically three simple skills. Number one is they knew who they were.
Right.
That's what we did here today. Now you know you're committed to honor and respect for family.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they spoke their truth.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, they gave their gift. So you're committed to honor and respect for family. And when you started changing your language around that, you would have said to the guy who took your cake, excuse me, I am committed to honor and respect for family. Put it down. And it would have meant something.
Close.
Right.
I'm thinking, but I can't say it on
here. But more powerful than stabbing someone because of the lack of communication right. of those violent acts, right? Mm-hmm. But you look at somebody like a Martin Luther King and says, I have a dream. Now, by the way, he didn't say I have a plan.
Right.
He didn't say I have a job. He said, I have a dream, which is communicating a commitment. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference between I got a plan
right.
and I got a dream. It's coming from the heart.
Right.
So the reason we call them heart virtues is when I studied the lives of these people that are heroes, every one of them has virtues living in their heart.
Right.
And every addict has the temperament of the hero. They have those five characteristics: self-centered, take risks, challenge the system, go after right. what they want, stubborn and perseverant. Just like Martin Luther King, just like Abraham Lincoln, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, every one of them mm-hmm. were self-centered, took risks, challenged the system, went after what they wanted, stubborn and perseverant. So if you're struggling with addiction, you have the hero's temperament.
Right.
We want to get you the hero's skill set. We want you to be able to communicate powerfully and beautifully what you're committed to. Starts with knowing what you're committed to. That's why we created the assessment.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to cover a little more of this. We're going to give them the website so that they can go take their own personal assessment, which I got to do the whole thing now because this is just, we're only at the tip of the iceberg, I have a feeling. Such a short, condensed version. Let's hit the break there, buddy boy.
I'm Randy Grimes. Injuries from my NFL career led to an addiction to pain medication. Fortunately, I found Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches. This program saved my life, and I believe it can do the same for you. For intervention and treatment for your loved one, visit our website at bhpalmbeach.com or call us at 877-886-2345. There is hope. We can help.
Recovery Radio Raw is a call-in 12-step recovery talk show. Discussing 12-step recovery from all types of addictions such as alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex, and so on with the disorders that make up the addiction. It's Indian Bob, his guests, and you sharing experience, strength, and hope with those in recovery and those who might be just curious to it. If you have a family member or friend or maybe someone you work with who might have a problem with addiction, then this is the show. Call into Recovery Radio Raw Monday evenings from 7:30 to 9 p.m. on 95.9 FM, 106.9 FM, and AM 960. Touch tone it at 877-960-9960 to get the real, the raw, the recovery. It's the Triple R, Indian Bob's Recovery Radio Raw, baby.
Drug treatment admissions for pain medication abuse have risen more than 400% since 1998. This increase affects individuals regardless of their age, gender, race, wealth, or level of education.
Behavioral Health of the Palm Beaches offers hope for the disease of addiction. For intervention, treatment, and aftercare for your loved ones, visit our website at bhpalmbeach.com or call us at 877-886-2345. There is hope. We can help. Located in a tranquil setting in Palm Beach, Florida, Seaside Center for Women is a rejuvenating haven for women suffering from trauma or substance abuse. We combine expert clinical care with innovative treatments. We help women regain their strength, find their focus, and live the lives they truly deserve. You don't have to spend another minute suffering. Visit us at helpforwomen.com or call 888-302-5579 and embrace a new beginning.
You are hooked into Indian Bob's Recovery Radio Raw, baby.
My stepdad gave me cocaine the first time, shot me up with cocaine when I was 17 on my birthday. He said, here, I heard you talking to your friends do coke. I don't want you getting any badges. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it the right way the first time. And he stuck a needle in my arm. And that was 17 years ago. He has since hung himself. He was forced by the law to go to a detox. He ended up hanging himself in that detox on the fourth day. He couldn't handle his reality as well. That's why he was using all his years, because he didn't like how he felt when he was sober. He carried a lot of guilt over his past. Strive to be the best you can be every day, man. You know, I mean, it's kind of a hypocrite thing to say, because I don't. I sure wish I could muster up the you know, the self-worth and the strength to carry myself through.
Sharing his strength, his experience, his recovery. It's Indian Bob. It's Dr. Feel Better. It's Indian Bob's Recovery Radio Raw.
All righty, we are back. This is Recovery Radio Raw, 12-Step Recovery Talk Radio. I'm your host, Indian Bob. Let's bring Khalil back. I hope I keep saying his name right.
Yeah, you got
I did
it.
Say Khalil. And Khalil, welcome back, brother.
Thank you. Khalil's perfect. You okay. Say it however you want, Bob.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. Just don't you say the things that you were saying. I think we got it, though.
Oh, good. Sorry about that.
And that's okay. Just for future reference, if anybody asks you to come on a show, as a matter of fact, you can get my number off my website because I'd probably like to have you back. I want to talk a little bit more with you, more than likely.
Sure.
There are certain words that we cannot say on the air. And then there are some that are still things that we shouldn't say, but we can say if we don't add certain words after them or preceding them. And it's a tough language, believe me. And it took me a while to learn how to speak the way I do now compared to the way I used to. Now, we're going to continue this, me being the guest on the show, and I'm going to continue to be interviewed. And Khalil, I want you to step in whenever you want, because obviously you have a relationship with Greg, so you kind of probably been through this thing. And if you think I need help or say don't answer that or something, come on, help me out, okay?
Okay, you got
what do
it.
You most want to know about Indian Bob, Khalil?
What do I most want to know about him?
Yeah.
I most want to know about him. I know you're a real Indian, American Indian. I wanted to know that, and I found that out by listening. I wanted to know how long have you been clean and sober?
February 15th was 10 years.
Wow, that's great.
Now, let me ask a question. What was the turning point? And I want to find out for Khalil as well. What was the turning point?
And what was the trigger? You're going to go right back to honor sober? And respect the family.
No, I actually want to know, and that we may find that in there, but what was the, like, specifically describe what, I told mine. I looked, so girl walks up to me, says, you drink too much, you can't stop. Put it down, haven't touched it since.
I got arrested, and my wife at the time, my children ended up in a homeless shelter.
That's a turning point.
That was the turning point.
I bet. Khalil, what was yours?
It was a series of things. It was county jail, a couple of overdoses, one flatline. But the actual absolute last day, I overdosed on cocaine and I lost my vision. I had a horrible seizure, and when I came to, I couldn't use my legs. They just were like, they weren't. I could feel them, but they were like rubber bands, and I couldn't walk for hours. And I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life like that, and I just prayed and I prayed and I prayed for hours and you know, made a commitment with whatever it is that created me that if I could just heal up that I would never, ever, ever go back. And I know that's not good AA or NA speak by saying never, but I made a commitment to whatever it was that created me.
Yeah, and what those all have in common for everyone I've talked to that's actually successfully gone through recovery, and you know, like you said, it's not good NA speak because who's successfully been through it until you can say you're in the grave and you know and stood your ground, but every one of them has the same basic moment of acknowledging the value of your life. You know, Indian Bob's like, you know, my family's taken away. It's like my life has value to these people. This, you know, honor and respecting family may have been the reason. It may have been just a turning point. For you, it's the same thing. You realized my life has value. For me, it was the same thing. I watched, you know, my father died drunk in a car accident. And I was like, I literally was looking at the glass going, I'm headed down the same road. So I think for every human being, whenever we make those, you know, those leaps into self-actualization, into like being a major contributor to humanity, and you know, Khalil, you're out there in you know, in the land of celebrities. I've worked with Olympic gold medalists, Academy, Emmy, Grammy winners, and these people go through the same struggles. Just because they're at the top of their game, there's so much pressure on them. You know, like money is one currency that we struggle with, but fame is another one, and they struggle with it big time out there in LA. There's all kinds of currencies that we wrestle with as human beings, and we're an addictive creature. So, you know, if you don't have some kind of divine intervention, your chances of making it through this game are slim. But acknowledging the value of your life as a human being, And that's kind of what happened for me also during the years I was a monk. I kind of gave my life away because I was like, you know, I'm not enjoying this. And it was another way of locking myself, you know, up and having easy. I just made one big easy choice and then everything was taken care of after that.
Kind of like an internal prison.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and in ways I gave up things that people never dream of giving up.
Right. Oh, yeah, I know. I was reading that part of it, and I'm going, okay, what the heck is wrong with them? And you got a successful business going on, and then you stop to become a monk.
But when that internal, you know, when your guts are screaming at you that there's got to be more to life than this, you know, acknowledging the value of your life is, I think, the only thing that answers the call. Because right. that's something that wants to inside feel like I actually reach out and touch people. Mm-hmm. Now, it's nice to know that your pain is your credential when you choose to make that shift. You know, look at Khalil. You know, claims he's unemployable, has no skills and everything. And he turned the one skill that he'd mastered since he was 12 years old.
There you go.
Drugs, into saving lives. So everyone that's listening here, your pain, I don't care if you had, you know, disease when you were a child, you were an outcast, you were abandoned, you were beaten, raped, abused, whatever it is, your pain is your credential. And there's people out there that are waiting for you to take a stand for your life, because until you do, they're lost.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know, like an Indian Bob goes into a prison and he steps up in front of the room and he talks about honor and respect, words they haven't heard for years, some of them. Mm-hmm. And it's like all of a sudden there's a new hope.
Right.
You know, I go into a rehab center. I talk about, you know, 31 years sober, my father died drunk in a car accident. And all of a sudden they have hope. Khalil can talk a game I can't even talk about. I haven't been addicted to drugs. So if you're a drug addict, you want to hear me or you want to hear Khalil?
You're going to that's a big one in 12-step recovery, because there is a separation between the two. For me, it's both, booze and drugs.
Right.
Either one or both were going
to. And when you can get that, your traumas never have to equal who you are.
Right.
That does not identify
that's
you.
That's what I've been getting out of this. It really is kind of astounding, and I think it's important to. First off, why don't you tell them how they can get to the Heart Virtue?
Right. You just go to www.heartvirtue.com. Okay. HEARTVIRTUE.com.
And you click on Take the Test. And you can take it right there online, and you know, it takes you through about a. You watch the video, it takes you through a process. Really, it's a really fun video.
Well, and what's so exciting about it?
It
takes about an hour, 30, 40 minutes.
40 minutes.
Okay, so set aside the time because it's going to be something lengthy. So maybe do it in the morning, maybe at night. Is there like a better time to really
when you're totally alone and the phones aren't ringing?
There you go.
Because you really want to, you know, 2 a.m. is fine, you know, whatever works for you. But you want to be dedicated. You know, it's also how we honor our life is by saying, I'm going to set this time aside for myself.
Commitment. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And note, you know, acknowledging that your life has value, that you're going to do this for yourself. Because, you know, it's like something I say to everybody. It's before you actually, you know, give up the drug externally, you do it internally.
Right.
And you make a deal with yourself.
And I do that every morning.
If you don't know what you're committed to, if you don't know what your heart's virtue is, you tend to be a little bit lost. Because, you know, I was unemployable for a very good reason. It wasn't that I wasn't a hard worker. My mother's from Poland. My father's from Palestine. I come from some of the strongest stock there is. But I couldn't keep my mouth shut. When I saw something going wrong, I'm committed to pure, authentic self-expression. Mm-hmm. So I see something going wrong in the workplace, and I purely and authentically express myself. Well, guess what? You're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to be a worker bee. You're supposed to do what you're told. You're never supposed to challenge the boss. And I didn't know that. And I'm glad I didn't know that. But what I'm more glad about is that I eventually discovered, through working with Greg, what my heart's virtue was. Because then it made sense. See, I always thought that I was just a failure and a loser and a bum, like my dad used to call me. I wasn't. I just was committed to expressing myself purely and authentically. It can get you into a lot of trouble.
Yeah. One of the most beautiful things that happens with Heart Virtues is it shines a light on the illusion.
Yep.
There you
yep.
go. All right, Khalil, it was nice having you. We've got probably about 30 seconds left to the show. I'd love to get your information. If you go to my website, just hit me off an email. It's recoveryradioraw.com.
Go to
contact Indian Bob, and we'll get all of it. If you want to do your assessment one more time, go to heartvirtue.com, HEARTVIRTUE.com. Click on Take the Test. Spend an half an hour to 45 minutes or whatever it is. Watch the videos. Find out what your heart virtue is. It was cool. I got a kick out of it. Next week on Recovery Radio Raw, we are going to be talking about Hero's Journey. It's about the family, the afflicted and the affected. It's a family affair. Join me, your host, Indian Bob, next Monday, 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m., Recovery Radio Raw. We're outie.